TD. You're listening to Education Matters, the only weekly broadcast in southeastern Wisconsin devoted exclusively to a discussion of local educational issues. Education Matters is co-hosted by Dwayne Olson, a retired member of the teacher education faculty at UW Parkside, Karen Sconsert, an associate professor of education at Carthage College, Mike Kehoe, a retired substitute teacher and a current special education support volunteer at Bullen Middle School in Kenosha, Chuck Wolbers, a special education teacher with Kenosha Unified Successful Transitions for Exceptional Students Program, and Steve Brown, Assistant Professor of Educational Leadership at UW-Oshkosh. Now, here's today's Education Matters moderator.
Good morning. I'm Dwayne Olson, your host today for Education Matters on WGTD HD, Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin at 91.1 on your FM dial, and 101.7 in Elkhorn and 103.3 in Lake Geneva. WGTD is a member of the Wisconsin Public Radio Network. Again, it has been over a year since I've had Kathy Dunkerson as my guest on Education Matters, so I'm pleased to welcome her to our WGTD studios today. Kathy is the Director of Extended Learning for the Racine Unified School District. Welcome, Kathy, and thank you for taking your time to share with our listeners information about the before and after school programs that are available in Racine Unified. Kathy is a Racine native and has been in this position some, 15 years? So she has excellent understanding of Racine as a community and the Racine Unified School District. So to get us started, Kathy, you once defined yourself to an elementary student as the principal of the after-school program at his school. So to get us started today, provide our listeners an overview of your position as Director of Extended Learning, and then we'll go into the wonderful details.
Thank you, Dwayne. Good morning, and thank you for having me on the show. I think first and foremost, I'm an advocate for children for after-school programs. I really feel strongly about that it's something that's needed for our children.
And we live in a society where our kids need these after-school programs. Parents need these after-school
Absolutely.
Programs.
Absolutely. Parents work in the when the time their children get out of school, and we need a safe place for children to be. But we also, provide them with some really wonderful learning experiences. I guess I would say my role is to support schools in supporting students' academic and social and emotional growth. As the director, I'm responsible for the overall development of the program, organization of it, coordination of it. I hire the staff, and I place the staff in the schools. I look for the curriculum. We really try to make it a really well-rounded program for children. So I pretty much oversee everything that has to do with the after-school programs.
Okay. And then you do have summer programs, too. Why don't you come and mention that, too, because I think that's really important.
Yes, we do offer summer programs at the same time that the school district has summer programming for children, academic support from 8 a.m. until 1 p.m., and then we pick up from 1 until 5 p.m. So that a child has a full day of learning. And again, it's a safe place for them to be during the summer, again, with working parents. But our summer programming is very experiential, meaning we do a lot of hands-on, take them on field trips, really get them to learning in a different way.
That's really wonderful because experiential learning is so much a part of what schools are trying to focus on these days, and it's something that we've had maybe too little of.
I agree with you there. There's definitely children learn best by immersion in whatever topic you're trying to teach them, and what better way to do that than to actually get that real-world experience by going on a field trip.
Wonderful.
To learn math or, science or reading. So.
Okay. So how did you get into this position in the first place? I knew you at Parkside as a student, and you're in this wonderful position for, 15, 16 years?
I'm in my 16th year.
Wonderful.
So. It's kind of interesting. I was approached by the school district in 1999, at the end of 1999. At that time, the school district had been awarded two large federal 21st century CLC grants. And at the time, and still to this day, they really encourage community involvement with the programs, meaning bringing the community into the schools, partnering with as many community partners. My role at that time, was I was working for UW Extension and United Way as a Success by Six coordinator, so I had many connections with people throughout the community. I received a call from the then assistant superintendent, took me out to lunch, said, we have this program, we think you'd be really good at it because of your community connections. So I was hired as the as an assistant director for, and specializing in community partnerships.
Yes.
And then 2 years later, I was promoted to the director's position.
And you've been in that position ever since. And the program has been growing through all of those years.
Yes, we have. At the time I became director, we only had five programs.
Really?
Five sites, five elementary sites, as a matter of fact. We had, prior to that, with the funding from the federal government, we had 23 locations, but no one looked at sustainability.
Ah.
So as those three-year grants expired, the programs were no longer in existence. So we had five. At that particular point in time, I started applying for a new cycle of five-year grants, and we were very fortunate that the first time I applied, we picked up five new schools, and we continued to do that, and we had 12 grant-funded sites at the time. And then the district, because they believe in this program, and our school board at the time really felt, and still does, that it's a, you know, a vital piece of what we do with learning, has supported all of the other sites that we have now, and we're back to 23 locations.
Well, so you're back up to where you started from, yeah. and that's really wonderful. And so sustainability then is a really important concept then, and you're the kind of person who's always looking into the future to see what else can you add to these programs for the benefit of the kids in our community.
What we're really looking at right now is how can we best partner with, you know, people in our community and or nationally to bring, you know, research-based, evidence, best practice programs to our youth. And so we're always looking for potential, you know, funding sources that will help us sustain these programs. It typically costs about $65,000 a year to run an after-school program for 2 to 3 hours a day. That's actually pretty, you know, economically efficient compared to nationally when you see the cost. They typically say it's about $1,500 to $2,000 a year per child, but we've been able to always keep that to around $700 or $800 per child and still have high-quality programming.
That's wonderful. That's, I think, something important for our listeners to be aware of. By the way, the grade K-5 programs are called Lighted Schoolhouse, and the middle and high school programs are called After Zones, and you also have mentoring. Let's distinguish between these programs and these levels for our listeners here.
Basically, it's the type of program that's being offered. So our K-5 programs are 4 day a week. Well, we have some now that are 5 days a week.
Really?
Monday through Friday, three of our schools. That are what we call comprehensive programming. We offer science, reading, math, the arts. We're really putting a big focus on STEM for children, and if you listeners know what that means, it's science, technology, engineering, and math. We do this with some high-quality curriculum that keeps kids really engaged in learning. They have fun there. We have children who, I was told this story yesterday that we have a little boy who, his mom said, if he doesn't behave, he doesn't get to go to Lighted Schoolhouse. And so he's got great behavior because he wants to come to school every day for our program. So I just think that's just awesome, right? And then our middle and high school, they're more of a club-type program.
Okay.
Students typically there sign up for whatever club they want to attend. It could be anything from robotics to theater to forensics to...
So how do you decide what programs to offer? Did somebody steps forward, a teacher steps forward, somebody else steps forward, or someone in your repertoire
Available? Well, it's a little bit of everything.
Okay.
At the middle and high school level, we receive proposals from teachers or community partners that want to offer their programs.
Okay.
And we review them, and if it meets, you know, the criteria, and we think that there's that interest there from the students, then we bring them into the program, hire them, and that sort of thing.
At least you try it out, is that right?
Right,
and if it's successful, you continue?
Yes. Most of our classes at the middle and high school level are a 10-week class.
Okay.
Usually 1 or 2 days a week. And you can determine if the students really like it. So like last year and the year before, we were really trying to get in the area of, you know, engineering and technology, because
right.
that's the, you know, that's the wave of the future. It's a hot topic right now, STEM is.
Well, and that's the way the high schools are going with the academies.
Absolutely. And so we try to actually
reinforce
what they're doing in the academies. So, and then we are doing that now at the middle schools, because we have a middle school task force that's realigning what we're doing in our middle school. So again, we take our after-school programs and we build them around supporting that individual school. And that is, like I said, it's in partnership with teachers, in partnership with the administration in the building. And then, I guess, from my perspective, just years of experience doing this, I know I can recognize some really good curriculum, and then we will try those classes out to see how the kids like them.
Right. Okay. That's wonderful. And maybe right at this point, we should indicate that, why don't you indicate how people could contact you if they have an idea for a program or belong to an organization that would be willing to sponsor a program or whatever?
Okay. Well, first and foremost, you could call our office. Our phone number is 262-664-6990. We are also on the district's website, which is www.rusd.org. We have a location on that website that you can find out about our programs. You can email us at extendedlearning.org. That's learning.org. But I think the easiest way would be just to give us a call. I have an office staff that, you know, we're there from 7:30 a.m. until 5 p.m. each day. And we would love to hear from people out in the community who might want to partner with us to provide programs for youth.
And you're constantly looking for programs, so that's just wonderful then that you turn to the community then for these ideas and possibilities.
Well, and one of the other things that we are doing right now is we're moving our programs out into the community. While we love having programs at before and after school at our schools, we recognize that some families, their children can't stay after school because they take the bus to school and then
right.
there's no way to go pick them up. So we've been partnering with different organizations, over the past several years. This year, currently, we have partnered with the John Bryant Community Center to offer programming there. We are at two cop houses, the community-oriented police houses, the Mount Pleasant Cop House on Mead Street, and then the Anthony Lane Cop House. Actually, it's called the Steiberg House, but it's on Anthony Lane on the north side of town. We also partner with Cops and Kids, their reading program there. And we're looking to expand more to help children in the community where they live.
Okay, and let me mention here that you have worked with Police Chief Art Howell then in terms of working on these cop houses and that right, and establishing program, which demonstrates part of this cooperation that you have with agencies and people throughout our community.
Yes, we were really excited to partner with the police department, and in particular Chief Howell, to expand programming into the, police cop houses. Over the summer, we were also at the Villa Street Cop House, so we were doing some summer programming in the inner city of Racine, which is always needed. So it's been a great partnership that we've had with the police department to be able to expand and provide programs for them.
So if people are interested in finding out what programs are available in neighborhood centers or cop houses near you, just go over to the cop house and ask them what's going on, and they can let you know what's going on now and what's being planned for, like, the summer or whatever.
Absolutely.
The information that I found about your programs and your website indicate that you partner with youth-serving organizations, and we've just been talking about that a bit. Tell us about some of those partnerships that you've been involved with.
Okay. Over the years, we've had many. This year, we have the ones that we have been working with include the City of Racine's Park and Recreation Department. They provided some summer programs at some of our schools from 1 to 5 o'clock. That way, we were not you know, the school district just wasn't providing the programs. We were asking community people to come in and offer their program from 1 to 5, and that worked out really well. We work with Focus on Community. They are they do some programming for youth leadership in our middle schools. You know, Focus is our community's alcohol, drug, you know,
alcohol and drug,
you know, programming to try to keep children off of that. So we've been working with them for many years. The Boy Scouts, they provide traditional kind of Boy Scout programs in our after-school programs. There's a program in town, or nationally, it's called Girls, Inc. We have a local organization that offers that program, and they provide the STEM for girls in third through fifth grade, and then they do some literacy-based programming for girls kindergarten through second grade. That's been a long-standing relationship we've had. The YMCA actually runs one of our programs at Wadowitz Elementary, one of our grant-funded sites. They actually provide all services for that particular school, plus we work with them in partnership for their Young Leaders Academy and several of our other schools. And then, you know, we have a couple of other organizations, like a lady by the name of Fawn Fundenberg does a program called Savvy for Us. That's kind of teaching children etiquette and manners and something that, you know, really essential.
Is there
for
a good response to that?
Yeah. Oh, the kids love it.
Wonderful.
They do. And then, you know, we have an organization called Young Rembrandts that teaches children how to draw and paint. And that's really, the kids love that one too.
So here's the STEAM part of STEM, you know, is the arts part then of STEM.
Good. Absolutely.
Okay. Your web indicates that the after-school programs provides middle school students with a safe learning place to engage in academic help, career exploration clubs, and enrichment activities. And this is funded through the U.S. Department of Education 21st Century Learning Grants, RUSUD funds, and community partner funding. Tell our listeners about this, and what a wonderful way of maximizing outcomes from this combination of funding.
Well, as I said before, it's not cheap to run before and after school programs, and they are very vital. So we look to partnering with, you know, our community nationally to find funding where we're blending the funding. It's not just one sole source of funding that has a school operating.
Yes.
Both before and after school. And this has been a very successful coordination and cooperation between all of us trying to make sure that we're serving the youth. I think the impact has been very beneficial for everyone. I mean, you know, each organization has a need for whatever reason their services are,
right?
And so if I can partner with someone and they have some funding, for example, let's just say Focus on Community. They receive some of their funding from United Way.
Yes.
People in the community donate to United Way to provide services for children, and then Focus contacts me and says, we have some funding. Can we do these programs in your school? And I say, yes. You know, and then that's one additional little pot of money that can help support that school.
Okay, and then and together, then you're able to do things without. But if everybody was separate, you couldn't do as much.
Right. Well, and that's the. I think that's the strongest piece of it, is to say that we're coordinating and not duplicating things, services within the community. Thereby, blending that money makes it go farther.
Excellent. My. In your email to me, you indicated that your programs will be observing lights on after school nationwide. What is that, and when is that?
Well, I'm really happy to talk about this. I have been part of a National After School Alliance for, well, let's see, about 8 or 9 years now.
Okay.
I actually was an ambassador from Wisconsin representing our state when we would go out to Capitol Hill and talk to our politicians about the importance of funding for these programs. So for the last 20 years, the National After School Alliance has been promoting a national event whereby any after school, out of school time program would celebrate and help spread the word about the importance of after school. So this year, it's October 20th, we have 12 of our programs will be having open houses. If you are interested in learning about that, I would strongly suggest you go to our website. I didn't want to, each of the sites have a different time for their open house. But what you'll be able to see is you'll be able to walk in and see what do these after-school programs really look like and what are they doing for youth? What kind of classes are we offering? And how are these kids learning and having fun and being in a safe environment? So we encourage anyone to join us on October 20th. Go to the district's website, www.rusd.org. If you click on academics, and then you go down and you click on extended learning, it pops up a table for events, and that's where you can find where the locations are at and what time they're offered. Basically, we're open for these open houses between 3 and 7, so 3 p.m. to 7 p.m.
Okay, wonderful. So this gives us as members of the community an opportunity to get a firsthand view of what these programs involve and who's involved in them and what the outcomes are.
Well, as a community that's helping support these programs, we feel it's really important that you can see what we're doing with, you know, what our programs entail as far as working with kids and how it's benefiting them.
Will there be an open house then spring semester then too, or is this just it for the year?
This is just it for, you know, as an event goes, but we encourage anyone at any time, if you are interested in coming to see what these programs are about, you're more than welcome to stop in Monday through Thursday. Anytime the school district is in session, we are in session. So any of those days, any location, and see what the programs are about. We would love to see people in our community come in and volunteer to work with our youth or come in and, like we talked about before, propose something for us, see if we can do that partnership and thereby, you know, help children more.
And if people need some immediate information, just give a call to your office.
Absolutely.
And they can find out, get answers to their questions about your programs.
Yes, they can.
Wonderful. Are non-unified students able to participate in any of your programs? And if so, how would their parents need to proceed?
We are open to any youth between the kindergarten and 12th grade within the Racine Unified Boundary Area. So basically Eastern Racine County from
right.
I-94 East. Any child that lives in that vicinity is welcome to participate in our programs. Generally speaking, we send out information to the private and parochial schools at the beginning of the school year.
So that information should be in the school office. Somebody should have that.
It should. We realize sometimes, though, that that's, you know, not quite enough. But if parents are interested, and we have served a lot of children in the private and parochial and homeschooled children throughout our years of doing this. So if they are interested, if your child needs help with reading and math, and you're really looking for a tutor, we have, you know, tutoring programs after school. If they're looking for those enrichment activities, your child loves robotics, or they like to build things, or they like cooking classes, you know, we offer such a variety of programs. Please call our office, and we'd be happy to tell you what's being offered at each of the schools.
Before we came on the air, you were telling me about the cooking programs a little bit. Why don't you tell our listeners then about the cooking programs, because that really intrigues me.
Kids love to cook. Because I think they'd like to eat
then
what they
eat
like
the
to
what
cook.
They
absolutely.
Produce.
So, again, that's typically a class that's proposed by a teacher.
Okay.
We offer that starting in the elementary age, and it goes up through, right, and currently we have two programs at our middle schools. Gifford Elementary has cooking classes 2 days a week. It's so popular
right now, going on this semester.
Right, and we're actually starting a third day because the kids just love to cook out there.
Okay, see how the response then to these programs makes it possible to increase the offerings.
Yes. The fun part about the cooking classes, one, children don't really realize all the mathematics that they're learning in cooking and the science that they're learning and reading, because you got to learn, you know, you have to read a recipe in order to make that recipe. And then what we like to try to do is then the teacher's instructor will take their group to on a field trip. So one of our upcoming field trips with one of our cooking classes is they're going to take the children to the grocery store and actually, you know, tell them, here's a dollar amount of money you have. What kind of meal could you make with this? They have to learn how to spend their money wisely in order to make whatever, you know, kind of meal they wanted to do. Again, teaching them math, problem solving, you know, team. They have to work in a team. So that experiential learning that we were talking about earlier, those field trips, you know, are going to be building on those cooking classes. We have some cooking classes that will ultimately maybe even take their children to a restaurant to have a dinner, because we're not only teaching them about cooking, we're also teaching them about eating etiquette. And so how would you behave in a nice sit-down type restaurant?
Manners and so forth. So, and so this business of experiential learning, which is becoming much more prominent these days, I mean, has so many ways of educating kids that are fun ways for kids to learn.
I think, to me, what it means is it really brings that learning to that child, as far as sometimes, you know, math, for example.
Yes.
It's a linear thing. Some children just don't understand parts of math. But if you can incorporate an experiential experience, like going to the grocery store and I have to know how much money I have and how to add that up so I don't overspend,
yes,
then it clicks into them, you know? So we think that that whole aspect of experiential learning helps really bring that whole learning concept around.
And a lot of fractions in terms of measuring for making a recipe of some sort, a cake or whatever it might be.
Oh, yeah. So many math skills that you have to have when you're cooking.
that's great. So let's talk about some of these various programs. Help with Homework, I think, was one of your early ones and really the basis for getting the program started. Talk about what that does for kids and how that's available.
So all of our schools have homework help, or we call it homework help at the elementary age, homework at the middle school. At our high schools, it's called study tables.
Okay.
So they come down for when they need it. And what it does, you know, some children need extra time in order to understand and grasp a concept. And so,
yes,
you know, teachers obviously give the homework to help reinforce that learning that has happened during the day. So then the children come down to our program, and then, you know, they work on that homework, again, giving them more time to learn a concept.
Right, okay. How about enrichment programs such as Boy Scouts and chess? Do you still have chess going on?
We do. Chess is, we have had chess in our elementary and middle school, and so we still have some. That's a program that, like, the school will pick to have. Like, so some schools really like chess and some may not like it so
yes.
much. So
I suppose that depends on having a person who's interested in chess, a
absolutely.
Teacher or whatever.
Mm-hmm. The biggest excitement right now, I think, going on at our middle schools is we call it the Gamers Club.
Yes.
So they, you know, kids are all into their video games and handheld games. But we take that opportunity to, for example, we have a program right now at Mitchell Middle School that has 34 students in the Gamers Club. I mean,
my.
It's popular, right? But they're also not just sitting there playing games. They're strategizing, and the instructor in there will help them do these problem-solving and strategy skills. Again, like 21st century, you know, skills that children need to succeed. While it looks like it's fun and it's a gaming club, you are really learning some skills that's going to benefit you as as you grow older. So,
and one of the things I say about my children and grandchildren is they're going to live in a technological world, and any technological experience practically is important for them.
Oh, absolutely. Another one of our really exciting classes are our robotics classes. We use Lego Mindstorm Robotics. These children actually build their robots and
okay.
then program them. And then they have competitions, and that's gotten really popular. It's an engineering concept. I mean, that's all they're doing is problem solving, putting their machines together. It's not working. I got to redo this.
Yes.
That skill is going to be needed when they get out into the workforce.
Or how can I do this better, you know, so I can beat so-and-so
absolutely.
In this game that we play or whatever.
I would say, Duane, right now we probably have – between the various elementary and middle schools, we probably have over 40 different enrichment classes. So they range from book clubs to cardio fitness classes to robotics
yes.
to gardening. I mean, it's just a wide variety of enrichment classes that children can participate in.
Okay, and one of the things that we've talked about before in the previous time that I had you on was the impact of kids participating in these programs on their improving as students then, improving in reading and in math. I mean, you've got some data that show that. Isn't that right?
Yes. We actually measure our the students in our school district using measures of academic progress, or we call it MAP.
MAP, right.
And that's for reading and math. The children are assessed in the fall, winter, and spring. And we have data that clearly demonstrates that students that participate in our programs for 30 or more days will increase on their reading and or math academics. I was just looking at some data yesterday that, for example, one of our schools had 98% of the students that participated in our program had improved in mathematics last year. 98% of the children participating. So that, and all of our sites have significant high numbers like that.
So if anybody wanted to say that this is just strictly for entertaining kids, that really is way off base then.
You know, our focus is to help children academically. We're there to really improve their reading and math skills.
Yes.
We just do it in a learning environment that's different from the day, that provides them a different experience for learning, but it's also really supporting what they're learning during the school day. So it is more than, you know, just after-school fun.
And we getting back to the summer programs, you mentioned, I think, that you get more students from private and parochial schools and prairie school and so forth in the summer than frequently from Unified.
It appeared to be that way last year. I think it was because we put this big focus on, at our middle schools, the big focus was on STEM, and at our elementary schools, the focus was on project-based thematic learning, so it was really fun hands-on. And at the middle schools, we were offering programs like, again, robotics, rocketry, Kinects building. We were using Kinects. They look like toys, right? But these kids were building these motorized amusement park rides. The students were animation. So they were all really engaging classes, and I think something that maybe the private parochial schools can't offer their students, so they tried, you know, they'll sign up for ours in the summer.
Excellent. Okay, at this point, I want to remind our listeners that this is your host, Dwayne Olson, and you're listening to Education Matters on WGTD-HD at 91.1 on your radio dial from Gateway Technical College, Kenosha, Wisconsin. Today, I am visiting with Kathy Dunkerson, Director of Extended Learning for the Racine Unified School District. Our program has focused on before and after school programs and summer programs available in Racine Unified, ranging from help with homework, enrichment, and daycare. Now back to our program. How about daycare programs? We need to mention that just briefly.
Well, as a district, we don't actually operate the daycare programs, but we have licensed daycare providers providing that in our schools.
I'm glad to hear that because I think school people have enough to do educating the kids without having to provide daycare too.
And we know it's a need for our families. I mean, we have schools that start very early in the morning and get out very late in the evening. And so for a working family, child care is essential. And the less that you have to put, you know, travel a child from one program to another. So say a parent had to have their child in a facility that wasn't in the school, then that child care program would have to then transport that child to school. I mean, it just seems like a lot of transporting, right? So if we have them in our schools, parents drop them off when they need to and then pick them up, you know, at the end of the day. And we have some really high-quality licensed child care programs. Currently, we are partnering. We have three that are working at, I think we have six or seven schools that currently. Well, actually, I think we have more than that because we're starting one at O'Brown.
Okay.
I just come
hard down to keep track of what's
it
going
is.
On here.
I'm the district administrator who ensures that we have, you know, good quality programs with our licensed child care providers and that, you know, they have someone to go to in the district should they be having any kind of issues as well. So we're working real close with them to make sure that, you know, we have good quality care for our kids.
That's wonderful. Is there ever opportunity for any of the classes in our high schools, say, for those students to go into those daycare centers and have learning experiences there, or is that not yet happening?
Actually, I think, you know, each of the high schools have a youth development class or child development class,
yes,
and where the students can then do what we call internship hours or volunteer hours in licensed child care programs. And I'm sure that that's happening. I know that, you know, each year there's two semesters of that class. And so I know that they reach out to the, you know, child care centers to get that experience.
Real experience, then, working with real kids. Okay, let's talk about, is there a cost for students to participate in these programs? And are there scholarships available?
Some of our sites are completely free, and that's because they have a large grant that funds them. And so we don't expect parents to pay at all. So some of those schools, they have a $100,000 grant. We don't need any extra resources.
Wonderful.
For that school.
Why don't you list those or name a couple, three of them?
We have four currently that we do not have any charge whatsoever. McKinley Middle School, Case High School, Goodland Elementary School, and Red Apple. They all have a $100,000 grant. There's no need for asking for additional resources.
Right.
But then our other programs, we have some that are, you know, like I said, funded by the district. And then we have some six other schools that have $50,000 grants. And if your listeners remember, I said it takes about $65,000 to run a good high-quality program. So we do charge fees at, I will say, the majority of our programs, but it is on a sliding scale, and it's based on a child's lunch status. So, for example, at the elementary schools, if a parent is on free lunch, it's free.
Yes.
If a family is on reduced lunch, it's $5 a week.
Okay.
And if they're on full lunch, it's $10 a week.
Okay.
And that's for like 12 hours of programming. So we try to make it as reasonable as we can. We're not overcharging to make money. We're just charging some
to cover your expenses.
Cover the expenses. At our middle schools, it's based on a child takes a 10-week class, so it's $10 for a 10-week class. Again,
okay,
we make it as reasonable as we can, but we do have to bring in some,
yes,
resources to help offset the cost of, you know, some of the programming. You know, we hire certified teachers and educational assistants and highly qualified youth workers, and, you know, to cover those costs of salaries for those highly qualified individuals,
right,
you know, that's where the cost comes in for the majority of the program.
Okay. I was just thinking of something in connection with this, and it's gone through my head, so we'll move on to our next question. One of the programs you told me about the other day was that of the First Book Organization. Tell our listeners about that, because books are such an important item in terms of literacy and learning in our society.
Well, the First Book Organization is actually a national program. It's a basically it's a clearinghouse from publishers who have overstocks of books, but it was designed to get books into the hands of low-income children.
Yes.
So they make available distributions throughout the year where a person like an organization like us, we've signed on to, you know, be able to order books from them. And the only thing that we pay for the books is the shipping cost, and that's 55 cents a book. And now these books range anywhere from the price of $4 to $30. I've had some hardcover, you know, lovely books that were, you know, if you went to Barnes & Noble or other bookstore, you would probably spend $29 for that book. They're just, but we get it for 55 cents.
That's wonderful.
So I usually, I try to be able to have allocate three or four distributions a year, because our goal as a program is we like to give children 3 to 4 books a year to build their home library, and thereby they always have something in their house to read, and they get to select the books. You know, I mean, I will select from the titles that are there, and then we get them out into the schools, and then the children can select whatever books they may like. So it's a wonderful partnering organization that allows us to get literacy into the homes.
Okay, that's really excellent, because so many homes have so few books in them, and that's right. And so they get at least three books a school year that from this this activity?
It could be more. I mean, sometimes I order as many as I think the largest order I ever had was between 5,000 and 6,000 books. I get a lot of books at one time, and then you know, with 23 locations, it takes a lot of books to get out there. But we're actually getting ready to do a distribution to our kids right now. We have books in our warehouse that we need to get out to the schools.
So kids who are participating in programs right now this semester then would be the recipients then of these books.
Yes.
You know, what I was thinking of, too, in connection with your previous question was funds for scholarships. If anybody's listening and would want to provide funds for scholarships, would that be a possibility? Do you get people contributing money to you that could be used for scholarships for kids to participate in the programs?
We've never asked for it.
Okay.
It's not to say we wouldn't love to have it. I think especially as we are continuing to grow our program, I mean, there's only so much finite resources that school district can provide, and grants are what we call soft money. You have to keep applying for them. So I mean, if listeners would like to contribute to the program, they can contact our office and we could tell them how.
Okay, that would be excellent. And one more quick question, I guess, is if Unified were to receive a $20,000 grant to support additional extended learning programs for this school year and next, what would you choose if the decision were solely up to you?
My goal right now is to provide more programs within the community, partnering with the local community centers and using them as a location for programs. I think that's really important because, a large majority of our children are bused to our schools, especially
right.
from the inner city. And like we talked about before, it's hard for those parents to come and pick them up from our schools. So if we can partner with, the City of Racine's Park and Recreation Department to provide more programming at their community centers, and or the YMCA or any other organization
cop
that
houses,
has space, right, the cop houses, that's something that I'm really trying to push forward.
Like bringing them these programs
yes.
then to their neighborhoods rather than at the schools, just
absolutely.
Because kids get bused home. So our time is almost up. So is there anything you'd like to add in closing?
I always enjoy coming on this show and talking about the program.
I enjoy having you, too, because I think this is such an important program for our kids.
Well, I would just like the listeners to know we value these programs as a school district. We hope the community values them as well. We know that our parents value them, and we are always opening our doors for people to come in and partner with us and potentially volunteer in our program. So if you have any questions, please feel free to call me at 262-664-6990.
Okay. To our radio audience, we say thank you for being with us today as I visited with Kathy Dunkerson, Director of Extended Learning for the Racine Unified School District. Our program focused on the before and after school programs available in Racine Unified, ranging from help with homework, enrichment, and daycare. Thank you, Kathy, for this most informative program. We wish you well in this most important aspect of programming in the Racine Unified School District. Finally, tune in next Saturday at 10:30 a.m. for another edition of Education Matters. This is your host, Dwayne Olson, thanking you for being with us today.
You've been listening to Education Matters, heard each Saturday morning at 10:30 on WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. Archived programs are available on our website, WGTD.org, and you're invited to continue the discussion on the Education Matters Facebook page. From the WGTD Arts and Other Events calendar, Charles Portis' classic novel True Grit is this fall's big read throughout the Gateway Technical College District, which includes Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties. For a list of events, visit neabigread.org.
Support for WGTD comes from Andrea's, with homemade soups, salads, and sandwiches being served daily at their historic soda fountain. Stop by Andrea's today for lunch and an old-fashioned soda.
This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, WGTD Walworth County correspondent Jim McClure, and by Marlo Harmon, a lifelong Racine resident who's currently employed as an addiction counselor at Racine Correctional Institution. And now, here's today's host.
And welcome to this week's Community Matters. I'm Jim McClure, and we're going to be speaking today with Kristen Perry, the Executive Director of the Lakeland Animal Shelter in Walworth County, an organization that does a wonderful amount of good for the dogs and cats that we love and want to take care of. And Kristen, welcome to the program. We're glad to have you.
Thank you. Glad to be here.